You're listening to the Outspoken Bible,
a podcast from Bible 2020,
with Jen Robertson, Neil Glover, and Fiona Stewart. So this is episode number one, The Beginning. Here we are.
Hello. Good there, Fiona. Here. Nice to see you.
Could you just tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, what qualifies you to be outspoken about the Bible?
So my name is Neil Glover, and I'm a minister in Aberfeldy and Dullenweem and Grantley Logarate and Strathtay, which are three villages. Aberfeldy is a town in the middle of Perthshire. And I think possibly the only thing that qualifies all of us is that we're pretty passionate about the Bible, about the difference it's made to us, about the relationship we've had with it. I have studied theology and biblical studies, which I really enjoyed. So I think there's something about that brings you an understanding of some of the things that other people have said about the Bible over time. But as I think we're about to say later on, being an expert isn't actually the most important thing about reading the Bible.
Jen, tell us about yourself. I work for the Scottish Bible Society. I've obviously read the Bible for a long time, since I was a teenager, which wasn't recently. And for me, the Bible is God's story of how he's worked through thousands and thousands of years and continues to work with us and be with us. And if we don't think about the Bible and speak out about it, then we don't know what God's story is and we can't be part of it. I think when Neil said about experts, I don't like to be called an expert. Like, I maybe am someone who's got experience. So we all come here with experience of the Bible, of times we found it difficult, of times we found it really encouraging.
I have a thing about this expert thing. I get that we're not claiming here to have specific expertise in particular aspects of Bible discussion or theological translation or conversation. But I think what you just said about having experience. I'm increasingly kind of naming that as being important, that you do carry expertise, because you carry expertise in the process of living life in relationship with Jesus through his word. Actually, my hope for this is that we journey together with this as well, because I don't think we come thinking we've got all the answers to all the questions. If anything, we're going to open up some of the questions and tease out some of the doubts. Well, I maybe that's an appropriate moment for me to introduce myself as well.
Who are you, Fiona?
I'm Fiona Stewart. Yeah, I have worked in various ministry contexts over lots of different years. I don't have any theological training, but I have training in the arts. I worked specifically in the arts and culture and media, and it's similar to what you both said. Actually, I feel the Bible is really important to me, not because it in itself has special magic powers, but because it's the means by which I communicate and hear from God, or one of the means by which I hear from God, and it's where I encounter him, and it's sort of the bedrock to all of my kind of journeying as a believer. I come with that perspective, I suppose, and I guess, following on from what you just said, Neil, I feel quite strongly that, I think particularly when I first became a Christian in my late teens and then into my early 20s, I lived with a lot of fear that I was going to get fanoot somehow. I'd be found out as somebody who didn't really know their Bible well enough. You know, when I came to pray, I didn't really know the right words to pray. I might say something heretical. And that sat over me like a great sort of shadow, I think. I would love us to open something up so that people don't feel that embarrassment, or somehow they need to get to a certain level of understanding or head knowledge in order to be able to speak out about their journey with God.
We're all passionate as well about the idea that this ancient set of words, some of it was probably written down for the first time probably 3,000, maybe even older than that, years ago, is strikingly relevant and inspirational and teaches us about how we can live well in the world that we find ourselves today, which is both the world in 2020, and also all three of us live in Scotland. So what's it like to live in Scotland in 2020? These ancient words from, well, a lot of them from Israel, 2,500, 3,000 years ago, still carry across geography and across time.
So, Bible 2020. How are people getting on with using the app, first of all?
I love the app. I've tried to read the Bible for a long time, and lots of different things I've done. Recently, a few months ago, someone said to me, join this group, Jen, it'll be great. We'll read about the Bible and then we'll chat about it in the Facebook group. And I looked at the first Bible passage and it was massive. And I thought, I just don't have time to read this. But then I got my Bible 2020 app, and it's so easy, it's simple. I've always got my phone on me anyway. So it's exciting and fun. I've not really put, we don't often put fun in the Bible together, but I've found it really,
I think,
really
well, to be fair, Jen, you do. I think you're quite good at that. But just help me, tell me, what does the app do?
You go on to each day there's a verse only stays there for those 24 hours. So it's, you can't look back,
set of
you
verses
can't look forward.
For the day.
But it's short.
Yes,
so it's
excerpt.
Yeah, short enough that you can see it on the screen of your smartphone. And so you see it, first of all.
Uh-huh.
That's your initial engagement, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I was a more patient person, I would spend time reading that through, but I tend to jump towards the camera.
How surprising.
So can you, just before you go into the camera, can you read the bigger bit of the Bible that it's from?
There's a link to the YouVersion app.
So,
if you wanted to read those verses in context, which is a really good thing to do,
yes,
you can go on to YouVersion and read it before.
YouVersion's what?
It's another Bible app.
That's a great thing. I clearly I'm not engaging properly with this and figuring all out.
So then, your camera, so your performer.
You've got your camera, so you can record yourself. You can selfie, you can record yourself speaking the verses. And you can then, you don't need to do anything with that at all. You could just do it for the fun of it.
Yeah.
Or you can then upload it onto the video wall or upload it onto all your different social media platforms if you want to do that. And you're then putting it out there into the world.
So the video wall, can you see other people reading it?
Yes,
not until you've recorded. Well, you can. You can either look at it or you can, once you've recorded your own, you can see yours in amongst all the others. A few top tips, I would say, though, coming from a performance background.
Yeah.
Think about your selfie videoing people. Yeah. You know, so I've been looking at a lot of chins and a lot of kind of double chins. Actually, if you put your phone up above your head and look up to it, you look much more better.
And I think that comes with confidence, because when I first did it, I was in the house looking down at the phone, and I thought, it's quite distracting, because your face, it's at that moment when you switch on your camera and your phone, and you didn't realise you were on selfie mode, and you suddenly see your face.
Distracting or beautiful, Neil, you can say.
But as the weeks have gone on, I become quite inventive with that, and I have it like side views, or I'm walking. I have to be careful with the walking one, could go badly wrong.
In case you trip up, you mean?
Yes. When you log in and register, you can choose out thousands of versions of the Bible.
The thing that surprised me about it is I was surprised at how competitive I've got about it already. So just knowing a few other people doing it, particularly I have a friend who sent me a message saying, "Oh, I see you were at, you're in London, you're doing your Bible 2020. I was in the supermarket." Oh,
yeah.
So then that kind of spurred me on to go to more and more bizarre places to do it. So I've done it at Euston Station, I've done it at the BBC, I've done it just out and about. Just quite fun.
So there seems to be a couple of things that are quite important about this. One is that there seem to be quite short sections on the Bible. Why is that important?
I think people have very busy lives. Now that doesn't mean everything we do should be short and snappy, because none of us have got time. But I think it knowing it's short makes it easier to go for it.
Okay.
And it also makes it more memorable as well.
Yeah.
I find because I'm reading a short part of the Bible, bits of it stay with me during the day.
So you go deeper. Because there are some Bible reading plans, famously Robert Murray McShane's one from a minister in Dundee in the 1800s. It was four chapters a day, which is great. I've done it. You get a lot from it. But that's
or a Bible in 1 year, where you're doing chunks of.
But this is not that.
And because it's themed, so there's about, for 20 days for most of them, it's all round a theme. So the beginning is where we are just now. So I was astounded by how much of the Bible connected together.
Yeah.
So I was reading from completely different bits, New Testament, Old Testament, but what a connection there was.
So there's small
God
bits
making the world.
There's a theme.
Yeah.
The theme at the moment is creation.
Yes.
But then the other thing that's key to it is speaking it. So what's going on there?
I think that, because I think a longer section of the Bible, it would become unmanageable to try and do what we're trying to do with it, which is to speak it out publicly.
Yeah.
So now, when I say publicly, that might just be you having the courage to do it in your own room.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying everybody needs to, you know, stand at the top of, I don't know, Nelson's Column and proclaim
that
over
could be
Trafalgar
quite
Square.
Unpleasant.
But there is something about the power of God's word spoken out, and that's partly about our outspoken word.
Now
isn't
it? That has surprised you, because you were talking about this earlier, weren't you, Jen? You said something about it had. So you've been reading the Bible for years, but there's been someone about speaking it.
Yes, and I have read it in places where there's lots of people about, but I'm most aware of the change in me mm-hmm. as I say these words out loud.
Mm-hmm.
It seems more meaningful, more connected.
I feel like you're nailing your colours a bit. This is what I believe.
Partly, but it's also God. It feels more like God speaking to me.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm walking through the park with the dog and I'm reading about how God took the world and shaped it,
uh-huh.
I'm actually experiencing this. Now, obviously, we all experience it all the time,
yeah.
being in God's world.
Yeah.
But reading those words while being in his world, it just can...
So I had an experience this morning where I had read about creation in the Bible app, but it was a short period. And then I was out for the dog, I was walking, and suddenly, I don't know, there must have been 300 or 400 jackdaws suddenly flew over my head.
Yeah.
There was a whole load of them. And I think I paid more attention to that and what was happening
there. There's that bit in Leviticus that people who in youth ministry always talk about, but it's a great verse, about, you know, we talking about God's laws as we walk along the road, as we sit down.
Yeah.
There's something, I think there's something about that, about the app.
And that's
part of life. It's part of what we're doing.
And for 2,000 years, the first 2,000 years of the Bible's life, that's how people engaged with the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
They very few people could read, and so you spoke it. The one person who was in your community who could read, they would speak it and you would hear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's something about going back to it. And there's also something, I think, as well about the whole Genesis thing, which is that the world is birthed in a word being spoken or several words being spoken. And it seems to be right in the nature of the very being of the universe that when something is spoken, something happens. In fact, you could go as far as to say nothing happens without something being voiced at some point along the way.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it.
So let's drill down into this idea of the beginning. So so the first section of readings we're looking at is entitled The Beginning, but it's not that we're starting at the beginning of Genesis and working our way through. So like you mentioned, Jen, there's a whole scope across the whole scripture. So thinking about the state of the earth in its present form, that's been something that I find quite interesting to think about. Whether these verses encourage me or do they challenge me about what I'm looking at around about me?
The thing that's jumped out at me is that God's hands are on the planet. You know, not just when he made it. It's not just a thing in the past. But God's involved now. And we need to bring that into the conversation about how we care about the planet now.
But one of the things that struck me as I've read, so we began with John, which was an interesting choice. So John is very much copying Genesis in the beginning, but then John says something else that we never expected. We expect John to say in the beginning was God, and then suddenly John goes, no, in the beginning was the Word, and he's playing with Genesis. There's a whole bunch of images from Genesis that appear in John, things to do with light and words being spoken and darkness. Those are all Genesis words, but John is saying right at the heart of it is the Word who is with God. So at the very, very heart of being, there is someone, if I can use that word for a moment, who is with someone else. There is a relationship. The Word is with God.
Yeah.
And I love that idea that at the very heart of the being of creation, even more essential to creation than particles like atoms or quarks or photons or whatever particles you're into, or even energy, even more fundamental than all these things, at the very heart of the relationship of the universe, is relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Relationship is the fundamental unit of being, of God with God, of Word with the Father, and then later on we'll discover the Spirit. And I love that idea that these passages open us up to the possibility that this is a world in which there is a God holding on to it. There is a God who is a good God, and there is a God who is in relationship. And that goes against any idea of reality that causes itself, for example, that is an accident, or is only atoms and energy and nothing else. Fundamentally, it's about relationship and us living with God.
And does that play into the discussion that I would often have with people about the place of Genesis, that Genesis is not a scientific document. It's not meant to explain the how, it's meant to explain the why of creation. I mean, I think that's something that's been coming through to me. Mm. Like you say, Jen, that every verse is leaping out with the creativity of God, actually.
Yeah.
Because I think, for me, I think I'm slightly guilty of, when I talk about creation, I plonk it into Genesis 1 and 2.
And what these have said is all the way through these Job passages, these Psalm passages, there was one of the passages that said, God, who is the father of rain?
Mm.
And you know, God's keeping the rain going as an act of fatherhood, and begets, which is a feminine word, so there's a feminine image for God there. God begets the dew, the dew in the morning. And you think, wow, this constant act of birthing, or we read some of the passages from Psalm 104, God sustaining the world all the way through. But so one of the views of science, going back to that which you were alluding to, is that that God sometimes is thought of as a divine watchmaker who just kind of wound up the universe, set the laws in place, sorted out Newton's third law, and then came around to Einstein's law of relativity, and then sorted out quantum mechanics and got all those things sorted out, and then went, ba-da, and then just, I'm going to watch what's going to happen now. And Bette Midler didn't help with God is watching us from a distance. And then, but this passage, you know, God's involved. Even the dew in the morning is an act of, well, in that text, an act of motherhood. And even the rain falling is an act of fatherhood, that God is intimately part of the world here.
And I think, yeah, there's things I've never really noticed before until I read them on the app. So there's a bit in Psalm 19 about how God... the voice of God is poured out from things that have no speech, like from the sky, from the sea. Now, they don't speak, but God's voice is in them. You know, what does that mean? Yeah. And until I've done this, walking about, reading it, that I've,
This is all lovely, and it is faith building to think about that. But what about the climate crisis? What about the environmental situation we're in currently? I mean, this is a hot topic.
Literally a hot topic. Yeah.
How do we answer that if we're saying, well, God's not a watchmaker, he's actually fundamentally at work. Is he?
So I think there's something, Jen, you were very interesting, because I think you became quite passionate earlier when we were thinking earlier today about Christians who you encounter who kind of go, well, you've got to save the planet, and become very kind of angry and almost giving you a ticking off for, I think you were talking about cow's milk and plastic at one point. And
not a good combination.
Yeah, clearly not, yeah. And there's almost a certain sense in which we park the God stuff, and then we become eco-warriors.
Yeah, whereas, you know, there's something in all these things we've read about God is the God of all this stuff, and that's us, and he's put us in a very specific role, hasn't he, from creation.
Use the word stewards in Genesis.
So that we are here to care, and maybe our focus should be more on encouraging each other to be more godlike, you know, to be the creative, caring people that he designed us to be. So we're encouraging each other to look out for the world in our, when we are just individuals, but it's individuals that make a difference, isn't it? And the decisions we make, but not to be berated and shouted at, because that, well, for me, that just makes me kind of, I feel a bit full of terror that I've got it wrong, rather than saying, you know, who is this God that made the world? What does he want the world to be like? What's the big story of the world? What's
so
going to happen? What's the end of the story?
So is there something about the challenge that the climate faces at the moment? So even we're ceasing to use the word global warming, and we're now talking about global heating, because the level of heat that's staying in the atmosphere, that does seem a bit doomed at times. Like, even under the best scenario, we still probably, the ocean levels are going to rise, and the icebergs are going to melt, the polar ice cap's going to melt. But if you suddenly sense, well, wait a minute, maybe if we're doing this with God,
then... Because we've forgotten about God, so that's why it's so fearful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because without God, the planet is it. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying... Christians have said this down through the centuries, haven't they? We don't need to really worry about material things or worry about the planet. We'll just do what God wants, and God will, you know, if it all blows up, well, that's fine. I'm not saying that at all. But if the planet is all there is, and there is no God, and there's nothing beyond us, then yes, we should be incredibly fearful.
And but it's actually telling us that we're partners
God's
with God.
God's hands are in this, and even though we don't understand what's going on. He's here with us.
And I think there's also a thing as well that we are participating in the creation being enjoyed by God. Mm. You get the, one of the passages we looked at, Psalm 65, talks about the hills with joy.
Yeah.
Now, if the hills have been stripped of their forests, then that joy is diminished.
Yeah.
But if those hills are being preserved and looked after and they still have their glaciers on them, then they are more and, able to praise
and
God.
And even in a smaller way, there's a lovely meadow near where I live where I walk the dog, and people have started hanging lots of poly bags around the trees full of dog poo. You know, let's just be frank about it. You know, what does that mean for me as I read these words, as a wanderer out there, that the world celebrates and speaks of God's glory? Well, maybe I should just grab those bags, however smelly and disgusting that is, and put them in a bin.
So if the trees are going to clap their hands, they're going to find it harder to do that if they've got poo bags on them.
Yeah.
So we're enabling the trees to do what they were made to do.
And for someone else who maybe isn't going to hear the words in the Bible, I think, oh, someone took away all that horrible stuff.
Yeah.
And they may think, well, the world's a more beautiful place.
And that brings us, I think, to another key thing which is in these passages, which is that the world is good. So part of creation is appreciation, that God makes the world and then God looks at the world and sees that it is good. Somehow the creation becomes more when it is seen and it is enjoyed.
Mm. Yeah.
And if we're called to be like God, we're called to enjoy the goodness of creation. I think for me, that this story above all, and it's probably the most famous reading of Genesis 1 that there's ever been, is the Apollo 8 program, where, the context is that we're in the space race, we're in the 1960s, what's happened is 1959, the Russians have put Sputnik into space, and the Americans are suddenly going, oh no, there is a Russian satellite flying over us, we need to catch up. So John F. Kennedy then says, beginning in the 1960s, by the end of this decade, we will have put a man on the moon. And all the engineers are going, oh my goodness, how are we going to manage that? So what they do is they start the Apollo program, well, they start the Gemini program and the various other programs, but they start the Apollo program, which is going to be the one which is going to put people on the moon. And that has a disastrous start. Apollo 1, there's a big fire and the astronauts are killed. So they suddenly have to have this program, which is jumping forward at huge leaps every time. So the next flight, I think after Apollo 1, is Apollo 7, where they eventually get some men on an Apollo rocket into space. But suddenly it's coming to the end of 1968, there's only 12 months left, they are having to get to the moon before the end of the decade, and they are taking huge leaps. So Apollo 8 is this massive leap where not only are they going to put astronauts on a Saturn rocket, an Apollo mission around the Earth, they're going to have to fly this thing all the way to the moon, which is thousands of miles farther than anyone has ever gone before. And more than that, they're going to have to detach a bit of the rocket, which is called the command module, and they're going to send that in an orbit around the moon. So no one's ever done anything like this before. And so the Apollo 8 sets off, the astronauts head off and they do they see what's called Earthrise, really, really famous photo of the Earth appearing over the horizon of the moon. And that photo, which sees us like a ball hanging in the middle of space, many people think was responsible for starting the modern environmental movement. But these astronauts are asked to make a broadcast, and their names are Borman, Lovell and Anders. And they're thinking, what are we going to broadcast here? And eventually they decide that the thing that they are going to broadcast to the whole of, well, it's not just the Americans, because somehow this has brought people together and the whole planet is listening. And they read Genesis chapter 1. And they begin to say, and God looked out the oceans. You can see this on YouTube. You can see the planet, I think it's the moon, going underneath this really grainy black and white photograph. And God created the heavens and the earth, and he saw that it was good. And the way that they read the word good, even miles away in this terrible setup with loads of interference, good. And then they close out by saying, and we close from the crew of the Apollo 8, close with good night.
Good night, good luck, a merry all of you on the good earth.
Earth.
Oh, it's goosebumpy, isn't it?
So that was the... and but for me, that also embodies, what's it like to speak these words and feel the power of them?
Yeah. And that there's something interesting, I think, even as you were telling that story, thinking about the unity that comes. Now, I know it's not directly connected to the words being spoken, but there is something about the peace of unity as people gather together and the power of the words spoken over that. Which gives me hope in the current climate crisis, actually.
Yeah.
And it encourages me as a Christian, actually, to I guess, bring my Jesus perspective to that. Not in that haranguing way you were talking about, but what does it look like to be the person who speaks those words that bring unity, that bring peace, that bring...
Because I think if you're nagging someone to do something, the reason you nag is because there's always a little bit of fear in the background that you're scared that they're not going to pay any attention to you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have a confidence that this is God's world and God will allow us to work with God to look after it, then you can be a bit more confident, I think, about how God's going to hold on to it.
And that's a great thing about doing the Bible 2020 app, because it gives you that perspective each day.
Yeah.
Of how God sees things and how, you know, we'll never get the full picture of how God sees things, but it changes how we see things.
And not just each day, but each night.
Yeah.
One of the things that comes often quite often in these passages, and Job 9, and I think in one of the Psalms, I think in Isaiah 40, God puts this, the stars. And I think one of the things that these passages are encouraging you to do is to make the connection between the creation that you see and the text that you read.
I was just trying to find the verse that talks about he also made the stars. Genesis 1.
Kind of an afterthought.
It's just like an afterthought,
by the way.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's Genesis. Yeah, yeah. So he makes the sun, the moon, and also the stars.
Exactly. It's just like, wow, this is extraordinary.
Just a few of them.
Yeah. And it kind of lifts us up, doesn't it, to sort of consider that sort of stuff. What are our kind of takeaway points for you as you kind of go into this next section, I suppose? What has God been teaching you through that? What are the things that maybe we want to encourage people to be doing?
I think just like Neil was saying there about, you know, the reading is about something like that, the stars, and go out and experiencing it. It's quite hard in some parts of Scotland to see the stars sometimes. But also I was just thinking about the whole global nature of what we're doing, that people are reading these verses all around the world and looking at the same universe but from a different perspective. And to know when you're doing it that there's people all around the world reading God's words out, and I like to go into the video wall and maybe just click on one person who's speaking a different language from me, because I'm surrounded by people who speak Scottish English, and I don't know, well, I do know what they're saying because they're reading the same thing I've read, and just something just about hearing them and praying for them in their situation, wondering what their situation's like. It's very different from mine. Some places of the world where it's very hard to read the Bible. I mean, I just might have people looking at me strangely if I read it walking down the street in Glasgow, but for other parts of the world, they may be really taking a big risk to read out God's words.
Great.
I think there's a couple of things for me. One is, if this world, which these passages keep saying, isn't just an accident and isn't just a set of atoms who happen to be obeying a bunch of physical laws, but it is something which God intended to be there and still holds on to. If I'm in that kind of world, then my life isn't quite as scary as if everything's just an accident. If God can make Andromeda Galaxy, what kind of God are we encountering here? If God can make a whale and an ocean and a me, because the biggest act of creation that you keep coming back to again and again in these passages are actually human beings. If God can make a me and God can make a you, then what kind of God are we dealing with here?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fear that we all have if you just start thinking about the universe, you know, the fear we've all experienced because it's unimaginable, the massiveness of it.
Yeah.
But when you think about the universe in the light of what we've been reading, that it changes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think for me, so I've been thinking about the renewal of all things, which I think about quite a lot. I think about that idea of God renewing things, a new heaven and new earth, that it's not just a kind of transportation out to somewhere that doesn't exist, but there's a familiarity to what God's doing. I think that just the chat we've had even just now about the environmental situation, because that's a hot topic, we do talk about it a lot. I think just at the encouragement that when I participate in that discussion, actually I am joining God in the renewal of his creation. That for me is something I want to go and meditate on a little bit more, actually. What does that mean? Not just for God to be renewing things in people's individual lives or in our community lives, but actually on a global scale.
So there's no such thing as a futile gesture.
Yes. And I was just drawn back to Psalm 8, which is one of the readings as well. So you've made him a little, this is mankind, you've made them a little lower than the angels and crowned them with glory and honour. You made them rulers over the works of your hands and put everything under their feet. I mean, what a privilege, but also what a responsibility too.
We forgot about that.
Yeah, that we kind of join him in the renewal of all things. We hold hands with him and walk into what he has. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be picking up the idea of God is good.
Yeah.
Next time we meet, next time we discuss. But in the meantime, Jen Robertson, Neil Glover,
Fiona Stewart,
join us next time on The Outspoken Bible. The Bible 2020 app is available to download. If you haven't done that yet, then do get on board with that. Jen, you've also been working on some resources that will be available to people.
Yes, well, so the resources are to create those spaces in your normal everyday life to chat together as a family about the Bible. These resources are very simple. They're not designed for you to have to stop in the middle of your day, sit down at a table, get lots of craft stuff out, and spend hours talking about these Bible passages. They're about doing things as you go through your day.
And so how do people access those resources, Jen?
Just go to our website, scottishbiblesociety.org, and you'll find them there under resources.